Welcome to Vital Voices. Rene Montaigne is retiring after 40 years in public broadcasting, including 12 years as co-host of NPR's Morning Edition. Rene joins us today on Vital Voices.
First, Rene, on behalf of all your listeners here in the Appalachian region, congratulations on your retirement, and thanks for being such a respected presence in our daily lives on public radio.
Well, thank you very much. That's so sweet, and especially if it is on behalf of your listeners. I would be really touched to think that people are wishing me well.
Given all the world travel that you've done through your jobs at NPR to cover stories, is this going to be a stay-close-to-home retirement, or are you planning some pleasure trips ahead?
Not stay close to home, definitely. I will say in my travels, amazingly, one wouldn't know this, but especially South Africa, I developed, because I was in and out and I lived there for certain periods of time, I've developed an entire world there. So that is one very definite thing I'm going to be doing come the next couple of months. I'm just organizing it. I have a cat. So it takes a little bit of setting up, but I'm going to go over there and spend some real time. It's been a while, like some months or at least a bit of time there. So I don't think I'm going to in any way stay at home, but I do think I'm going to be working in the sense of trying to move on with what I know to do and do something a little bit more challenging in journalism, probably print. There'll be a lot of time at home as my home office, but not as home as just, doing the garden, which, by the way, I will be doing that too. I have a lot of energy. I've still can tap like I did when I was doing Overnight Morning Edition and still going to Afghanistan and that sort of thing. So I'm applying it to several aspects of my soon-to-be new life.
Your bio on the NPR website says you got into radio pretty much by accident. Explain how that happened.
I was at the end of college. I went to Berkeley, and there was a little station across the bay in San Francisco that friends of mine had all flocked to. It was new. It was a time when there were these smaller local public radio stations, and there still are, but there seemed to be more of them then or whatever. Anyway, this one was more like almost like a club. Everybody got to come in and have a show, music show, and the people who knew what they were talking about or musicians or a poetry show. And I was only there because of my friends, you know, the kind of thing you'd be, right? And so I was a little at a loss, and it was suggested to me that there was no news director, no news person. Why don't I just be a news person? It was almost like school. And so I did. I figured out how to use a mic and, you know, record interviews. And I sort of took to the streets and whatever interesting stories I could do, mostly with women. My hour-long show was called Women's Voices. And it was a time in which that did mean something. And so I would be trying to coordinate most of my coverage to women, that was so much range to do that. So there I was, working for free, good way to get into public radio, volunteering, but actually doing work. And that's how, I think is meant when I say I backed into it, or it was kind of an accident. I didn't expect it. I didn't go out and look for a job. I didn't think of myself as a journalist. But then I became one accidentally almost. And by the time I became one, I learned and knew what I was doing. And I started freelancing at NPR. I was asked to. And I by then moved to New York. And I actually turned into a journalist. But at that point, I'd really embraced it as audio work, working in radio, because I never thought of myself as a print journalist, but the audio to me was just an amazing way to communicate. And it was also touching and had emotion. I think it got to people in a way that was a little bit deeper than just reading something, and certainly than just watching something on the TV.
I think a great example of that is your coverage of your father's experience during World War II. For people who may not have heard your story, describe what your father went through at Pearl Harbor on December 7th, 1941.
Well, for one thing, he had they'd been out in the Pacific for a couple of years because he was too poor to go to college, basically. And so he had signed up as a sailor, you know, in the Navy. Yeah, and he had just met the girl he fell in love with the day before he shipped out to Pearl Harbor, who turned out to be my mother. And although he never saw her for another 7 years because the war took them apart, but he got to Pearl Harbor a week or so on the USS California, and on December 7th, he was due up on the Admiral's deck as a radio man. And that's why he survived, because the Admiral's deck was high, high up, and the horrible thing that happened to the USS California was torpedoes hit it, opened it up, water started pouring in for various reasons. Not that the ship wasn't watertight, but they had opened a lot of doors for a different event, and because it's a surprise attack. And water covered in oil burning started pouring in, and the radio men, very low below the deck, the electricity went out, and they did a kind of a fire brigade thing where they sent up munitions by hand. But they stayed down, and his best friend and all his friends and Chief Reeves, the head of the radio man, they all died. Terrible deaths. And even thinking about it, actually, my dad was a very good storyteller. That's if you listen to the stories. And we had letters from him as a young man writing about this to his mother. Before and after. So it was a very powerful story, I think. And we gave it a lot of time on Morning Edition in it was 2001, like the 60th anniversary. So I loved that story and still love it. And there's a newer version that went on ATC on the 80th birthday. And I used the tape. I redid it in a certain way and made it shorter. And it's still accessible because that was December 7th, 2021. If anybody wants to hear it again, on All Things Considered. But thank you for bringing that up, because to me it was so touching, and it was so, my dad would never have asked for anything like that, but I know it really touched him that I cared. He wasn't telling war stories as we grew up, you know what I mean? That we spent hours talking about the war and everything before and everything after.
Here are excerpts from Rene Montaigne's story from All Things Considered.
The story really started 2 years before Pearl Harbor in Sioux City, Iowa. 18-year-old Arthur Montaigne, known to his family as Bud, left a note behind in an empty house. To his parents and six younger brothers and sisters, he wrote, "I've joined the Navy. I'll write when I get to California." His family was still struggling out of the Depression. The Navy offered a shot at radio school. Soon his mother received a gleeful letter. "I've been accepted into the radio gang." What's more, having graduated at the top of his class, the young sailor was assigned to the flagship of the battle fleet, the USS California, and he was headed for Hawaii.
"Dear Mom, having quite a time in Honolulu, hula dances on the ship, swimming at Waikiki Beach."
Art also wrote home about more serious matters, and by mid-1941, the young sailor and his best friend, a wild and handsome Texan named Joe Ross, had hatched a plan. Europe was at war. France had fallen. Dunkirk was history. They'd joined the Royal Canadian Air Force and fight alongside the Brits. But by the time they got back on leave to Long Beach, they had missed their moment.
"We went over into the Canadian consulate, and they said, 'Well, we're sorry, but you're a few months too late.'"
By October of 1941, the U.S. had decided it needed every man it had in uniform. This turn of events did leave Joe Ross free to go back to Abilene and propose to his high school sweetheart, and Art to indulge his passion for big band music. One night at the Crystal Ballroom, a pretty girl caught his eye.
"So I took her out on the dance floor and realized right away she didn't know California-style dancing. And I said, you must have come from Iowa. And she said, no, as a matter of fact, I grew up in Nebraska. Oh, I understand. So you don't know the Palladium Shuffle or the Balboa Hop and some of our California dances.
Her name was Aline.
It was the first girl I'd ever met that I really was smitten with. It's kind of like love on first sight.
Art convinced her to meet him and Joe the next night. They talked. He mentioned the word marriage, but the two young sailors had to be back to their ship by midnight. 3 weeks later, on December 5th, the USS California pulled into Pearl Harbor. The next day, Art went ashore to Christmas shop. He bought his sister's muumuus, his little brother's games. For the girl he'd fallen for back in Long Beach, he bought an opal ring and mailed it that very day.
The next morning on December 7th, I woke up, had a cup of coffee, and about 7:50, I heard this tremendously loud clang, 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 followed by the bugle call, which was our signal to go to battle stations.
Radio man second class Arthur Montaigne raced to his battle station with the Admiral's staff high up on the flag bridge.
And I could look out and see the planes, which were just airplanes to me, and I thought it was just a drill. I saw two of them approaching us, and they obviously were two torpedo planes. Then I started watching their rivets of the torpedoes coming and approaching the ship, and then finally they disappeared from my view, and a fraction of a second later they hit the side of our ship, and the ship shook, and the water blew 50 feet in the air above the sides, and the Oklahoma had capsized, and all I could see was the bottom of the vessel, totally tipped over. And the men from the Oklahoma, all you could see were the heads bobbing, and pretty soon a lot of small boats were dashing out there to help rescue all these men. Several hundred of them never escaped. About that time, that's when the Arizona blew up. And we couldn't see too much back there because of the black smoke by this time. And from then on, the oil in the harbor started burning.
The torpedoes that had ripped open the USS California had knocked out its electricity, rendering useless the mechanized hoist that sent ammunition to the upper deck. Deep inside the ship, in a dark passage fast filling with oil-slicked water, smoke, and flames, Chief radio man Thomas Reeves organized his men to send the ammunition up by hand.
Because the only way they were going to get ammunition up to the anti-aircraft guns was like a bucket brigade.
As the Japanese planes disappeared over the horizon, the men on the California were ordered to abandon ship.
The ship had been bombed. The ship was slowly sinking. There was a flame. I got down there in the oily water, and it seemed like it was 6 inches deep in oil. But you had to stick your head under the water if the flames came near you so that you'd swim under the water.
Finally, safe on shore, Art never saw his best friend, radio man Joe Ross, again.
He didn't make it. Dearest Mom, how's every little thing at home? Fine, I hope. There is something I wish you would do for me. I became engaged
to a girl in Long Beach when I was last there, and I wish that you would write to her. Someday she will be your daughter-in-law. Her name is Aline, and I feel sure that she will wait for me. If she don't, that's just my loss. Well, goodbye for now, and all my love, Bud.
As it turned out, that girl in Long Beach didn't wait. During the years of war, she learned to fly, got her pilot's license. She worked at several war-related jobs and got engaged two more times to other suitors heading off to war. By 1945, Art Montaigne was a commissioned officer in the Marine Corps, preparing for the planned invasion of Japan. But in August, the U.S. dropped two atomic bombs, and the war was over. Now he could see a future. He'd never forgotten the girl, and when Aline and Art met again, she was still wearing his opal ring. She would wear it for the rest of her life. As for Chief Radio Man Thomas Reeves, he was awarded posthumously the Medal of Honor. Joe Ross, a Purple Heart. And almost 70 years to the day, on December 5th, 2011, my dad, Bud, joined them when we laid him to rest at the National Memorial Cemetery of the Pacific. Commonly known as the Punch Bowl, It sits high above Pearl Harbor. Along with my mother, Aline, they have all now taken their place in history. Renee Montaigne, NPR News.
How did your parents' World War II experiences shape your own life and your thinking?
Well, my dad was not shy to talk about it. I was raised partly in Hawaii anyway. You know, he was in the became a Marine officer and had a career as a Marine after that. And so that affected my life experience because we moved a lot. We didn't always go big places, but, you know, first Arizona, then Southern California, then Hawaii, then back again. So I went to 13 schools before I graduated high school. So I did probably affected me because I was a kid who had to meet new kids sometimes twice a year. And it worked for me. I really thrived on that. I was popular, if you want to know, put it that way. And I wasn't an outward going girl, but I was a person who could walk in and find my space pretty fast. And so I loved school. And also my family would travel together. So we were a unit, which is nice. My sister and my brother, my parents, always together doing, driving across country, being on a ship, you know what I mean, moving. So it was a whole mix of things that probably put me on the path that I got on, which was being very open to new experiences, to new places, with a solid core of where I'm from and whom my family, you know, with a solid core. Not, I wasn't lost. I had a base, a family base of love and caring. And my parents were my best cheerleaders. That always helped with public radio because... Because my other relatives in the early days when I was freelancing, they were like very likely to say and literally say, when are you going to get a real job? You know, look at them like, what? I guess they all thought I was supposed to be a TV anchor. But they were all proud later. So that was okay. But never my parent, my family. They were all, whatever I did was good with them.
Well, Renee Montaigne, thank you so much for joining us for Vital Voices.
Well, Fred, thank you for having me. And thank all your listeners for all the years of us all being together.
Our guest has been NPR's Renee Montaigne, retiring after 40 years in public broadcasting. I'm Fred Sossman.